Thank you for tuning in to this edition of Signs of the Times. This week's program is hosted by Pastor Jack Hibbs, and his guest is Hedya Miramati. Their discussion is filled with important information regarding the history of, the doctrine of, and current events involving the Muslim religion. Since there is a lot of information to cover, let's get right into the program with Pastor Jack Hibbs and Hedya Miramati here on Signs of the Times.
Hey everybody, I probably said this before, but I've never meant it this much before. You need to sit down, you need to hang on, because what you're about to hear is not only going to be true, it just might be too much for you, and I hope that's not the case. But you are about to hear some things that you need to learn, know, and get ready for, and I hope most importantly, that it draws you closer to Jesus as we get near to the coming of the Lord. In the meantime, let's dive into this. Hey everybody, welcome to the Jack Hibbs Show, and we're excited to be with you. You are going to be excited that you've been with us, because we are going to be saying some things, we're revealing some things that are not top secret, but you're not hearing about it in the legacy media. You're not going to be hearing about these things, not only in your local press or national press. You probably won't even hear about these things in much of the international or the Western international news agencies. But I have with us today a young lady who has served our nation in many ways. She was born and raised a Muslim, actually, and parents of she's a child of Iranian Persian parents that came here to the United States, and almost 30 years ago, my goodness, almost 30, she started this when she was five. So almost 30 years ago, her career went down a path that who would have known but God would lead her not only into the Oval Office of the White House, but down the halls of some of the most powerful people in our nation. And she's played a very critical role. And now, if that wasn't enough, Jesus has gotten a hold of her heart some years ago, and we're excited about that. I am introducing you today to someone who's on the Real Life Network, and that's Hedya Miramati. And we're really happy to have you.
Oh, thank you for having me.
You bet. You are a tremendous resource. And so we kind of preempted a bunch of other podcasts to get this one in because of what has not only happened in New York City in the recent election, but the infusion of vitamin B, so to speak, to the Muslim community since Zoran Mandani's election. A lot of people are talking, a lot of cities, municipalities are flirting with Islam. Hedya, where do you want to begin? You want to talk about the history, the start points?
I think it's important for people to see the historical continuum, because if we don't start there, then people think this is happening in a vacuum and think, oh, it's one Muslim person here and another Muslim person there. And they don't understand the ideological underpinnings of the movement of Islam. And I'd like to separate up first what we're talking about is Islam. We, as Christians, we love all people. So we're not talking about Muslims, we're talking about the ideology. Mm-hmm. So if you start back in what was Christendom, so all of the Middle East, North Africa, Europe, these are all Christian lands. Once the Islamic army advances outside of Mecca, 632 about, it starts invading all of these Christian lands. By 732, almost that entire region that was Christendom is conquered. Mm-hmm. And people say, I was taught in history that this was a voluntary conversion, that everybody was happy in those lands. But
because you were taught in Madrasa?
No. UCLA.
UCLA.
I was a student of Sanford Shaw, one of the greatest historical scholars ever. And he just talked about it as if there was this wonderful dream. It's our education system that's corrupted. That's a different story. So by the time we get to the Crusades were a response to 300 years of Christians crying out to their brothers and sisters around the world saying, please rescue us. Thousands of churches were burned. People were massacred. Women were raped.
But this is a podcast. We get to interrupt each other.
Yes, please.
Why did the Christians that were being taken captive or being placed under this or surrendering to Islam, why did they send a message to the Christian world to come and rescue us? I'm being sarcastic right now. Why didn't they fight?
you're better at telling that story than me, because apparently they did try to fight, but very unsuccessfully. They were outgunned, outnumbered, swords. I don't know. Maybe it's the theology, the sweetness of the theology. I don't know.
Yeah.
You know, but the response was, so by the time Pope Urban declares the crusade, they've already been decimated and have lost most of that territory. Fast forward, there's 1,000 years of conquest of Christian lands, and Islam spreads even farther. So it's actually not pushed back until World War I, where Europe, now Asia Minor and the Middle East and North Africa, that's gone. Now, those are Muslim. That's what we call the Muslim world.
You're going so fast. This is going to be great. We'll be here for hours.
Okay.
Which we need to
do
this.
I'm worried about. If you want to do it in an hour, fast.
No, no.
Okay.
So I'm trying to hear somebody from the on the other side of this lens. And they're saying, well, what do you mean they started in Mecca and Medina and they took off and they got into Europe? Are you suggesting, Hedia, that Islam is a theocratic, geopolitical ideology that has conquer and conquest in its mindset?
It's at the root of Islam. They've never denied that. It's a global expansionist doctrine.
Global expansionist doctrine, folks.
And they've never denied that. That's always been the mission. And so the average Muslim may not understand that because they don't know history or they don't even read the Quran. The average Muslim doesn't even read the Quran.
That's all right.
Because if you read it, it's in the scripture. So fast forward, we're at World War I. This ends the first phase of the Islamic conquest because they no longer militarily can defeat the West. So phase two begins. And bin Laden refers to this in his manifesto, that this is now their attempt. Phase two is how they're going to reconquer the lands that were stolen and conquer more land until all the world is subdued into Islam.
Right.
That doctrine is no different for the Saudi government today as it was yesterday. What bin Laden was doing was just creating a militia. But that's the same doctrine that the Saudis believe, that the Qataris believe, the UAE believes, because people think that because they're Western allies on paper, that they don't have that doctrine. But they do. And part of that is the Muslim Brotherhood.
Right. But the American listening to this, they don't want to believe this. Even if you showed them all the documentation, I know as a pastor, and you know, being involved in the agencies that you've been involved in, there's this, in fact, Mikhail Gorbachev, it just comes to my mind. Mikhail Gorbachev said, prior to the fall of the Soviet Union, he said, we must take advantage of the Americans' desire to not want to know.
Cognitive dissonance sounds like when parents.
And so what we're talking about right now, I bet you people are just tuning us off right now because they don't want to believe. They saw the president of Syria now. They saw him wearing a suit. He's not in camos.
He's not in camos.
He's good now, right? Because he's got a suit, Armani. He's got a tie. He's good. That's the depth of the American discernment. And it's pathetic and tragic. And that's how you get conquered.
Well, let's go back to that question you asked.
Yeah.
Why did Christendom get conquered for 300 years before they cried out?
Yeah.
we're just seeing, that's why I think the historical perspective is important.
Yeah.
Because it took 300 years until Christendom decided they were going to respond. Oh. And we're doing the same thing over again. People who do not learn from history are doomed to repeat
it. Right.
And the question becomes for us here in the United States, 42 Muslim Americans were elected to office in this cycle.
This cycle being a couple weeks ago. 42 Muslims were elected to office in the United States several weeks ago.
From everything from state, local school boards, city councils, state representatives, and federal. And then that number is added to the 230 that already existed. So there's 280 Muslim American officials
total. To add another number, in some way, shape, or form, Trump's administration is adding also Muslims into places of power.
Yes. So he recently put up for nomination Amir Ghalib, the mayor of Hamtramck, who is referred to as the mayor of America's first Sharia city.
Where's this place?
It's in a little part of Michigan, but they have an all-Muslim city council, and they allow animal sacrifices in people's backyards. So there's, you know, the blood of goats and lambs for the Islamic holidays running down the streets. People complain they find carcasses in the trash cans. And people are complaining that the call to prayer is played anywhere between 3:30 and 5:30 a.m., but five times a day.
But that's okay because they control the city council.
Yes. And there's a viral video going around of somebody complaining, and they basically just shut her down.
So can I just, so you would think in America and in a city council or in a any government of the United States that there is the warm affections and loyalty to the Constitution of the United States.
Mm-hmm. You would think.
If my understanding is correct, you cannot be a true Muslim and be a constitutionalist. Is that correct?
So the entire corpus of Sharia includes prayer and fasting, marital relations, and subdue and conquer non-Muslim lands. So Sharia is all of it. If you are devout, you abide and believe in all of it. So how do you believe in a parallel? It's a parallel legal system. How do you technically, sincerely take an oath of office to defend the Constitution when you believe in a parallel legal system?
So right now, the liberal, progressive, woke world is screaming bloody murder at for Trump for being a tyrant, renegade, despot, king, you name it. But what Trump is doing may or may not be liked by some people, but he's very clever to stay within the bounds of the Constitution. He's not stupid.
Right.
But a Muslim comes along and says, hey, you know what? My faith in God's most important. Something we should be saying.
Right.
But our wimpy Christianity says, oh, we don't get involved in politics. So the Muslim does.
Yes.
But it's interesting because if you were to get them off to the corner and say, hey, so you're going to run for city council? Totally. What are you going to do when you swear to the Constitution? I don't care what I say about the Constitution. I'm not going to do it. Because I'll pick and choose what works for me, but my loyalty is to Allah and to
Well,
Sharia.
Most of them take an oath on the Quran. They don't use the Bible.
But what are they saying with their mouth?
You know, maybe they say they're going to abide by the Constitution.
Because it is legal in Islam to lie to advance the cause, yes.
Exactly. So let's go to the concept of taqiyya. So when a Muslim, again, this is a people who practice. There are millions of secular Muslims, culturally Muslim. Their family was Muslim, but they have no idea about what I'm talking about. They would call me a liar because they haven't studied it. So if you are a devout Muslim, when you are in Dar al-Harb, the abode of war. So remember the conquest, second phase.
Yep.
Everywhere that's not under Islamic law is in the abode of war.
Yes.
When you're in the abode of war, you could do anything you need to conquer.
To win.
So
no
your
rules.
Wife, like Mamdani, her look at her, his beautiful wife with the short sleeve and the cute bob hair.
Yes, I think I know where you're going. Say this slow so our audience can get this. She's looking, Westernly normal?
Yeah, beautiful. She's adorable. So you look at her and you're like, how militant can this guy be? Look at his wife. But they live in the abode of war. And so whatever they do of deceptive practices, Allah's not unhappy with them because they're doing that to advance their cause, the cause of Islam.
It's okay to look Western, act Western, speak Western.
Yes.
All the while, as long as Allah knows that your motive is to conquer in His name.
Yes. The ends justify the means. Absolutely.
What is hudna? Is that a form of hudna?
Yes. So nations, and they have publicly professed this. Memory.org, you know, puts out these great videos where
That's
they're translating
M-E-M-R-I.org. M-E-M-R-I.org.
And they talk about, and they play those videos where they say this is a hudna. Yasser Arafat called the Oslo Accords a hudna. So it's a peace agreement while Muslims regroup, advance till they're able to strike when they're stronger.
Yeah.
So it's a temporary peace. It doesn't have the same meaning as an American peace agreement where we believe that this is something we're going to honor. That,
oh, yes.
You know, that we did it with integrity and with honor. That is not the case.
Yeah. In fact, you're not making that up because historically, Islam will advance until it is being resisted enough to whereby it has to call for a timeout.
Right.
And the timeout sounds like something like, we want to negotiate. We'd like to stop right now. We'd like to, and by the way, notice that they will advance and advance and advance. Negotiations, not on the table. We're going to keep going. And then when they're in trouble, they want to negotiate. But that is always, always history has proven to basically, I would say, we'll negotiate and agree for a peace, a pause, to reload.
Exactly.
Not to find agreement for peace, but to reload.
Exactly.
Yes, that's what history has shown us. Yeah.
And so the question I think at this point is, because I run this over in my mind 100 times a day. So we have religious liberty in this country, right? So we can't stop a Muslim. People are calling for banning Sharia. Well, then you're basically saying that we're going to change the First Amendment, that they don't have a right to practice their religion. So the question remains, what are we going to do to advance our existing laws and motivate the American people to say the America that we believe in, that is founded on Judeo-Christian values, is worth fighting for? You can't blame the Muslims for wanting to defeat us. What are we going to do in response?
I actually commend them.
Right?
When Mondani won, and I was sitting there, I watched the victory, kind of thought it was going to happen anyway. And then what got me putting some social media out there was some, I think the word is Hebrew, nincompoop. No, it's German, actually. But said, how could this happen in my city? And I said, how could this happen in your city?
Right.
You should have known because you Christians did nothing.
Right.
And I heard this. Ted Cruz put out the data, post-election data, and a remarkable amount of white women, American, voted for Mondani.
Screaming, great, Sharia's coming.
Yeah.
Social media posts.
Yeah. A lot of them young, 25 to 35. And they also were really anti-Christian. We're done with this Christianity stuff. We're done with it. We're done with it. Okay, listen. I understand that maybe you had a bad experience with a church or a pastor or whatever. You need to stop, though, and calm down and take a broader view that wherever Islam goes and takes power, go look at those countries. And the first thing that you should do is go look at the welfare of women
exactly
in those countries.
Exactly. And the question is, the reality is we have a spiritual and moral vacuum, you know better than anybody else, in this country. That the communist Marxists, you know, the red-green alliance people talk about, the communist and Marxist and atheism has been building this, has been basically digging a hole in the Judeo-Christian foundation of our nation.
Absolutely.
Starting with the school system.
Curriculum,
changing the way... It changed the way I was taught history, and that's all the way at the university level. But so it's basically dug this hole where all of these deviant ideologies, this kind of it's basically against Judeo-Christian values, anti-American values, are just filling this vacuum. So the only way we're going to have an effective response is if the church, connected to the Jewish community, the Judeo-Christian foundation of this country, starts to fight back. 30% of Jews voted for Mamdani.
Well,
so
I'll save that part for the end. just, I'm going to ask her. She doesn't know what I'm going to ask her, but I'm going to ask her. I'm going to ask her what Allahu Akbar means, and I want you to listen to her definition, because I think it's going to be, I think it's going to be revelatory. It was to me when I first found it out. So, a lot of people say Allah Akbar, but it's actually
Allahu Akbar.
And what is that?
God is great.
Is it God is great, or is it God is greater?
Oh, okay, yes. Technically, God is greater.
Is it?
Yes.
Greater than who?
Greater than our God. So they think.
Isn't that interesting?
Isn't it?
God is greater. And my question is, greater than who? I say that because in Galatians chapter 1, Paul the Apostle says, watch out, be on guard, be careful against anyone who teaches any other false gospel, or even comes and tells you an angel gives you another gospel from heaven. He said that angel is accursed, and that gospel is accursed.
That's what Muhammad pretends, that he received a revelation from Gabriel.
From Gabriel, isn't
yes.
it? Muhammad says he got the gospel from the Muslim gospel from Gabriel, but the book of Galatians was already in distribution before Muhammad came along. Christians were able to know the writing of Galatians, folks, was in circulation in 55 AD. Muhammad comes along, what, how many, 600 years later?
600 years, about.
And says, the angel Gabriel gave me this message. And somehow, obviously I wasn't there, but somehow the church, what, doctrine of appeasement? Didn't think it was ever going to happen? I don't know. Is this true that the Mecca years of Muhammad was somewhat peaceful?
Right.
Until the Medina.
Well, he gained strength,
he
like
gained
the Hudna. So the Meccan verses are the more peaceful verses that are abrogated by the Medina verses that come later, which are more violent about conquest, because he's gained strength.
And they supersede,
strength.
Don't they?
Yes, and they supersede. Yeah, so yeah. They say they abrogated the peaceful yes. verses and are replaced with the Medina verses. But I think we should also point out to your audience, because a lot of people may not know, who's Allah?
Okay.
Because a lot of interfaith activities, a lot of churches around the country, around the world, say that based on the interfaith activities, Allah is the same God. It's just another word for God. But it's so important for Christians to know that is not correct.
Tell us.
Because our God is a triune God. The understanding in the Quran, which is the holy book of Muslims, of who Jesus is he's a prophet. He is not the Son of God.
Right.
There is no notion of a Holy Spirit and a Father God. So by saying it's the same God, you're woefully deceiving yourself and the Muslim. How can you witness to a Muslim and tell them about your God if you tell them it's the same God? Why would they want to come to saving faith in Christ?
Right.
You're basically leaving them at the door of hell and walking away.
Right. Right.
How is that the heart of a Christian?
Right.
You know, so this is part of the deception, is that, you know, why do we care so much he's Muslim? Okay, he may wrap his wife in a bunch of clothing, but what is that going to matter to us? It matters a lot when they're sacrificing goats in your backyard or playing the azan at 5:30 or the moral police. They ban, you know, certain types of clothing in Europe. Girls and boys can't sit on a bench without getting harassed by the moral police
oh,
in England.
Oh, gosh, right.
So do we want that here? Do we want Sharia courts to enforce legal agreements between men and women? Do we want people like me to suffer death for leaving Islam? Because the punishment for apostasy is death.
Yeah, 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 exactly. In fact, if a jihadi were to walk in this room right now, you're going down before I go down, because you're the greater betrayal.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I have a dear friend of mine who was beaten to an inch of her life in Virginia for trying to convert. She did convert, but her father beat her to an inch of her life in front of her relatives.
I'm not going to say where this happened, but it was in the United States, where it was reported that in a U.S. prison, I don't know the details about it, but what was reported is that an inmate was beheaded in prison.
Yes, I remember hearing about that.
And the beheading was something that is still hard for me to fathom, at the way that they did this. They did this with his bed sheets. Now, I want you to think that through for a moment.
Wow.
Bed sheets. They used bed sheets to behead an individual.
That's horrific.
Now, you just think about that for a moment. But this is the religion of peace.
And that's also a misnomer, because Muslim is one who surrenders to Allah. So it's not peace. It doesn't mean salam. It means Muslim, which is a surrendering to Allah, surrendering to Islam.
The Muslim, the Arabic word Islam means what?
To surrender.
To surrender.
Right.
To submit.
To submit.
So just the other day, our good friend, Frank Turek, was talking at Berkeley.
Oh, yes.
And a young woman had said that Islam is the religion of peace. And then he asked her, what is the meaning of the word Islam? And she said, the word means peace. And he said, no, what's the meaning in Arabic? Do you speak Arabic? She said, I actually don't. But she does, the young girl. Did you see it? The young girl said,
I missed it.
She does. And the young girl
no.
is standing like this. And she said, it means submit. And the American Muslim girl looked at her like she had been electrocuted. She heard the word submit.
Yes.
And so that's what it means. But a lot of Americans, a lot of Christians don't know also the meaning of Allah. What is the word in Arabic Allah mean?
Well, it's a God, but it's a different God.
There's no doubt it's a different God. But is it a noun?
I've heard you
right?
say it. Yeah.
Is it an adjective? Is it a verb? When someone says that you believe in Allah, because it's my understanding, I may be wrong about this, but if I picked up an Arabic Bible, a Bible that's in Arabic,
yes,
would it say, I don't know, I'm honestly asking, where the word God appears because I speak Arabic, wouldn't it be Allah?
Yeah, that's the problem.
It would be, right? But when the Bible says the Lord, He is God. Now, what does this mean? So capital L-O-R-D is God. Allah is God in Arabic, but what is the God of Arabic's name?
Yeah.
Does a Muslim know the name of their God?
No.
Why do you, in Islamic theology, what would an imam tell me if I were to say, Mr. Imam, tell
His
me-
His name is Allah.
No, yeah, I didn't ask you about that. Allah means God. No, what's his name? You see what, folks,
yeah, that,
listen
that,
to this.
It would have gone around and around like that.
So they don't know his name?
No, I mean, I grew up thinking it was Allah. I assumed that was the name. It's not until I came
because
to Christianity and realized it was
Because I could make this a God, right? Can't I carve an image out and make it a God?
Yes.
And if an Arab-speaking individual walked by and saw me bowing down to this carved image, he would say to his friend, look at that guy. He's bowing down to a, what would he say? Would he bow down to a Allah? Right, that's the word for God.
I wonder if they would use it in that context though. I wonder if, because I know we intentionally, when we're speaking to Arab or Persians, we, like for as a Persian, I use the word Khuda. So to distinguish it from Allah. But I don't know in the Arab street, because I'm a Farsi speaker, I don't know if the Christians use the Arabic terminology, like the Alhamdulillah, which is an expression, thank you, God, if the Christians also use that same expression, or they try to distinguish it to...
I see.
You know, to
sure.
make a difference
That's
between
That's fair.
Their God and,
good.
And Allah.
Good to know. Wow.
But yeah, I think if for us as Americans, it's important, especially as Christians, in our witness, to make sure that we know it is not the same God. So
yeah.
that we can witness properly to Muslims.
Yeah, yeah. So the point she's making clearly is that the God of Islam is not the God of the Bible.
Exactly.
the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Completely different. You were saying about World War One and the
second phase.
Really, the end of the Ottoman Empire. Can you pick it up from there?
Well, so because they had lost militarily, the next phase was a cultural jihad, which was we will advance by political means, by demographics, by cultural transformation. And it gave rise to the Brotherhood Doctrine, the Muslim Brotherhood Doctrine, which is
1928.
Right.
Yes.
Which is the same principles. And I know you mentioned to me the Grand Mufti of Egypt aligning himself to Hitler. Part of that is also a Marxist communist alliance.
Yes.
And so this alliance goes back decades. It's way before the public attention to the Red-Green Alliance. The alliance of that doctrine goes way back decades. And they learn from the Marxist principles on how to advance and take over a society. Which brings us to the point, why are the leftists, who have nothing in common with the Muslims, aligned to the Muslim candidates? Because, well, what? They both seek destruction of the Judeo-Christian values.
Since the day I first heard the Red-Green Alliance, I understood what they meant, but I immediately began to inform my television set, you're missing a color. It's a triad of colors. When you look around, it's the Red-Green, and what's happening right now, a Red-Green-Blue Alliance.
Blue being the globalists.
No, blue being much of the Democrat Party.
Ah, okay. Some people call the blue the globalists.
That
they're being advanced by Soros and all of those other funders.
I think the red, green, and blue is being funded by Soros and his buddies. But think about that for a moment. Listen, by now it's just everybody's left this podcast. It's just you and I. The red we get, communism, socialism, we understand that. Red, commie, that saying. The green, that's Islamic. Blue, why would you say blue? Blue represents the Democrat Party. Why, how dare you say such a thing? I only say it for this reason. Which party hosts more Muslims in that party than the other? The Democrat Party.
Oh, for sure.
By far. In fact, as you and I sit here, there's a couple of them trying to take power right now from the Democratic establishment as we sit here. I believe it's the Red-Green-Blue Alliance because the Red and Green Alliance can't find a home in the red of the Republican Party, at least not yet, okay? Yeah, I know.
If we think about the appointments recently made by this Republican administration,
so
making a great foothold.
Let's blow this podcast up then and say it.
So there are a number of interlocutors. The mayor of Hamtramck, the first Sharia city, was appointed to ambassadorship of Kuwait. Ted Cruz is basically holding up his nomination. We'll see if the vote goes through.
So wait. He was nominated for this position by who?
By President Trump. That's the only way.
So President Trump somewhat recently nominated, who is this?
Amr Ghalib, the mayor of Hamtramck. He's one of six Muslim mayors around America. But he is he got the phrase of being the first Sharia city because his entire city council is Muslim.
And so Trump rewards him.
Because of the Michigan Muslim vote.
To get the Michigan vote.
Yes. He went to a number of events. They've spoken together. There's this clip of them at a rally with the entire Trump family, and he praises him. He's a smart man. He's a good man. And he gets up and endorses Trump. And so this is the favor he gets. Before we went on air, we talked about the federal prosecutor in Los Angeles, Bill Asaley, that's also gotten a post. And so there's a number of other people that may get appointments and positions in this administration, which will likely make them Republican candidates. So I don't think it's going to stay entirely Democratic.
That's right. In fact, in California, there's reasons to believe generationally, I don't want to say generationally, but for the last 40 years, it could be a generation, isn't it? That for the last 40 years, just like a church might groom, train, school missionaries to go into Zimbabwe or some country to share the gospel, in California, there's there's reasons why I believe that there have been Democrats that took the missionary model and got into, as it were, a huddle and said, I will run as a Republican. I'll act Republican. I'll have an R behind my name. But when I get into office, or enough of us get into office with the R behind our name, we will do Democrat ideology, whatever it might be.
Or Islamist ideology.
Or whatever. So you say, Jack, that's ridiculous. How could you say that? It's not easy for me to say, because if I really contemplate on what is really going on, it's very disheartening, because it means that our constitutional form of a republic is gone. It's been infiltrated. Evil actors have now gone into, and they didn't view politics as politics. They viewed politics as an entry for a missionary venture.
Right.
To advance their religion, which their religion is big government, big socialism, anything but a republic.
So you don't think we have a fighting chance? Because I think if the church were to activate and realize the threat, they should be able to respond and at least have some victories.
Let's rewind this. Right. This is what I heard you say just now. Wherever there's a fight, let's go. So I hope the church shows up to the fight. The fight's going to happen.
Right.
I just hope it's a big one and we win. Do I have faith in the Christian to fight for what's right? Do I have faith in the Christian to resist a death cult and socialism and Marxism? I don't have faith in the Christian to do that, unless God wakes them up. Because you got to remember, Hedia, I have been crying with a few others for over 30 years in California to pastors to wake up and teach the Bible chapter by chapter, verse by verse, expository manner, but at the same time, because the Holy Spirit is relevant today, He's actually alive. The Holy
Thank
Spirit
God.
Is alive today, which means the Bible's relevant to today's newspaper. For some reason, pastors just can't connect those dots. They just don't see Jesus or the gospel or the Spirit relevant for today. So how dare you say that? It's easy to say. When the culture is crumbling and being invaded in its curriculum in every which way by Islamic infiltration and progressive infiltration, the church you go to on Sunday is telling you about five principles on how to be happy.
Well, I would like to
That tell is you, a losing strategy, folks.
I would like to tell your audience publicly, if anybody wants me to come out to their church and train them on Islamism and how you fight back, I will make
Where
myself
do they go?
Available.
How do they get a hold of you to do that?
It's either they can DM me on Instagram, Hedia Miramati, my name, I believe it's printed out on the podcast, or Resurrect Ministry. And they can just drop me a line and send me a comment.
ResurrectMinistry.org.com. ResurrectMinistry.com. Take her up on that offer.
Because I really think, and even if we don't take back the whole country, what I said to one of our local pastors is, I want to inoculate the 15 kids that I know.
Exactly.
The youth ministry. If I just get these 15 kids, these 30 kids, and they are strong enough in their faith, well, that will multiply.
Could you imagine in California, these are pulpits in California. Could you imagine if one pastor started educating his flock to live a relevant Christian life 24/7, 365? Do you know that California or
right.
Missouri would change on one Sunday?
Absolutely.
In one Sunday, it would happen.
Well, again, if we look back at history, it took Christians 300 years to wake up, but they did wake up. They became the two swords of Christ.
Yeah.
Where the Lord says, do you have a sword? And they said, no. They said, sell your cloak and buy one.
Yeah.
Well, they started to live that principle. So maybe one day the church will.
I'm glad you brought this up. So I looked at a seventh grade social studies book here in California. And I forget the chapter number, shame on me, but I read it. And it had a picture of various Muslim warriors and how they were advancing They didn't call them warriors, by the way. Mm. They were advancing agriculture into Europe. They were taking the secrets of drip irrigation. They were taking all of this into Europe, but Europe didn't understand because it shows a picture, a cartoon of a crusader who was ignorant. He couldn't read. In fact, even he was wounded in battle, and it was the Muslims who took care of him and healed him. This is in a California.
I'm telling you, that's the history.
Seventh grade social studies book.
Yeah.
Okay. So I'm saying that to say this: whoa, whoa, bad, boo, boo, Christian crusaders! How dare you? How dare you? But when you take a study and look at the amount of jihads versus crusader response. It's shocking, isn't it?
Shocking. I mean, it's not even comparable.
Not even close.
It was a defensive battle. They follow just war theory. It was literally a defensive battle. There's a great scholar, Raymond Ibrahim, who's written 7 books on this, basically trying to re-educate the world on the history of the Crusades and just this conflict, this never-ending conflict wherever Islam encounters Christianity. And I encourage people to listen to him because we really need to relearn this. I was totally red-pilled because here I was with a history degree and I didn't know any of that perspective. Mm-hmm. And so I think Christians need to understand where we've been and take a look at where we're going and decide, you know what? I am going to get involved in local politics. I'm going to find candidates and put my treasure and talent behind them winning. So school boards, city councils, state officials, federal, get involved at all levels. I'm going to make sure my kids understand the news, understand these pro-Palestinian rallies, understand what Islam is and is not. And I'm going to make sure that my community feels that they're empowered to respond to these things. So whether I blog about it, I put social media posts. This one lady goes to a city council meeting to complain about the prayers in the morning, and the clip went all over the world. I think there was 53 million views last time I saw it. So that one woman taking the courage to go up and be like, hello, I don't want the call to prayer outside my window every day. Is going to change policy all over this country. Yeah. So can you imagine if we did that in every city council meeting where any kind of deviant practices are going on? We can impact change, but we have to do it from the ground up.
Yeah. So, I mean, I guess this is for some other time. I was going to say yes to everything you just said. The Muslim understands that if they can get 10% of the population or 10% of the school board or 10% of the city council or the county board of supervisors, they win. The thing is, the Christian has got to stop thinking that Christianity only applies to certain areas because you have to have a biblical worldview if you're going to make a difference.
Has to.
You have to. I'm going to let you keep going. I've interrupted you enough. Historical pathology, communism, socialism, Islam,
You want to talk about our Ahmed Ashara, the recent terrorist visit to the United States?
Go.
Well, because I think, so it's not only the conquest that's happening here in the United States, but it's also our foreign policy. So President Trump welcomes Ahmed Ashara, the new leader of Syria. And up until last year, there was a $10 million bounty on his head because he was the leader under the nom de guerre, Sheikh Jilani. He was the leader of Hezb Tahrir al-Sham. So he breaks off. He was part of Nusra Front, the Syrian al-Qaeda, responsible for death of thousands of soldiers. And he has this interview. I can't remember the interview on Fox a couple of nights ago. And she's like, but you were an al-Qaeda terrorist. And he says, I was 19. I was young. He was not 19 during that war.
I was just like the ones coming across the border illegally. Same age. Kids do crazy things.
And he totally lied, first of all.
Of course, he gets to.
So, but because he's now considered credible, throughout my career, my job was to try to build moderate Muslim networks, reformers that were trying to change the interpretation of Quran.
And your exposure was no lightweight community
project. No, I traveled
to
37 countries. I worked under 5 presidential administrations, you know, multiple ones of Bush and Obama.
You had a White House clearance.
I had a TSSCI clearance, the highest level of security clearance. I was at FBI headquarters, building intervention program to stop ISIS terrorists and kids from radicalizing. And every time we encountered, every time we tried to build a moderate network, we were overrun by people in the U.S. government and outside saying, these people have no credibility. You can't use these people. And Trump used the exact words about Ashara. He's a tough guy, but you have to be in that region. He has credibility. So constantly, we do not have a centuries paradigm. We don't look at things in terms of 100 years, and we're like, if we give this guy this piece of land for that amount of money and we pump his gas, he's going to continue wearing his suit and be a nice guy.
That's right.
Meanwhile, Christians are being massacred, Alawites are being massacred, and he says, that's ISIS. That's not me.
Yeah.
He plays terrorist alphabet soup. He says, that's not my organization. Those are the bad guys.
Isn't it amazing? Obviously, everybody, you know this. It's all spiritual, all the time spiritual. So if you were to flip that around, a Christian might say, we want to have the Bible in public school as an elective, right, for literature, which is totally a great idea. The Bible's the most influential book in the history of man. Why not? We've got to do away with Christians. We got to get those people. Oh, my goodness. A Muslim shows up and says, we want to teach Islam in the school. Oh, you betcha.
It's mandatory.
Yeah, mandatory. You bet. In fact, let's get it mandatory for you. That's a spiritual conclusion because it's a spiritual battle. It's remarkable. So even
now we're shaking hands with a terrorist, we're putting him in control, we're asking Erdogan, who has declared himself the neo-Ottoman Empire.
For the Ottoman Empire.
Yes.
I'm going to reestablish it.
And he is the one that is defending al-Shara and saying to our administration, just give him a chance. Just give him a chance. He's a good guy. He's changed. Jihadis don't change. And he wasn't even asked to change.
Yeah. Yeah.
So he wasn't told to denounce HTS.
Yeah.
It was just taken off the terrorist list.
So what do you think of people like Patel and Bongino? Are they just being a yes man to Trump? Or are they honest? I mean, these guys have data access to them. What are they?
I've met people like that throughout my career. I mean, respectable, honorable people, and they just don't believe that these guys will defeat us. They just don't. In their core, a lot of them were atheists, and they didn't believe that they have an eternal worldview to defeat us. So they believed everything was a numbers game. Everything was about power. I mean, George Bush even thought if we gave them freedom, then they would change. So Trump is saying, if I give them money, if I give them status, they're going to change.
Yeah.
It's just a different playbook. But I don't think most of them want to harm America a lot, especially in this administration. But they're naive to think, I go have a shot of whiskey with this Saudi cleric and maybe even go to a strip club, and that means he's a moderate.
And that's part of the taqiyya.
That's part of,
oh, shucks, I have to go drink with these guys and go to a strip club because I'm advancing the Islamic agenda. The Christian can't even wrap their mind around what you just said. Okay, I get it.
And I personally know people, dozens of them, who had gone through that experience.
Hey, listen, I got to see a copy of Bin Laden had written the devotion. Call it a word of encouragement to the 9/11 terrorists. That morning that they had gotten up, that day on September 11th, all of them read, wherever they were at, they all read that same thing from Bin Laden. And the investigations by the FBI post 9/11, almost all of them, if not all of them, before they took their baths and shaved their bodies, they went out with hookers and
partied their tails off. Yes.
Yes, that's a mild way of putting it. But yeah, wow.
And people again, that goes back to Mamdani's wife and her clothes, that people, Americans, don't understand that kind of duplicity. Me and my former Muslim believing friends, like we have a small group of us, one of the greatest liberties in Christ is we no longer live in that duplicity.
Yeah.
We had one life to our parents,
yeah.
One life to our friends,
right.
One life to our coworkers. Sometimes we couldn't even keep track of all the lies. You know, I mean, my parents thought I was an angel, and
sure.
I was completely off the rails.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It's a constant deception, and we learn it from little children. As a little child,
we're born with that.
You know, and they don't understand that this is the culture.
Mm.
Because if you really were to just listen, if you would just watch Memory's videos and listen to what they say directly, they tell you the doctrine.
Yeah, that's right.
They tell you what they believe, but we choose to ignore it.
That's right.
Our politicians choose to ignore it.
So we'll show you this graph or this map.
Yeah, so this is actually produced by CARE. So they wanted...
This is from CARE.
This is from CARE.
Council of America for Islamic Relations.
Yes. They created a map to show what states have been conquered. That's not the way they describe it. But they call it the American Muslim Elected Officials by State. And so this is a two-year-old map. So they said they're going to reproduce a new one because they have 42 new candidates. But it's basically documenting what states have the most elected officials that are Muslim.
This is fascinating. So let's
yes.
hear it. Are you able to point out a few?
Oh yeah, sure. So we have California has 26.
Surprise, surprise, surprise.
Right, and Michigan has 37, which I'm sure is going to be up from that now. Illinois has 15. Massachusetts has 10. You wouldn't think Massachusetts, right? It's not as obvious, but let me also identify, what is Texas? Texas is 7. I know
Texas
that number
is
now
increasing,
is higher.
Right.
Because we have the Epic City
yeah.
complex that was talked about in the news,
right.
if you recall.
Right,
it was
course.
About them trying to build a Sharia-based city. You want to talk about that for a minute?
Oh, talk about that for a moment, and then tell our friends in Idaho what's happening in Idaho.
Oh, right.
So
Epic City in Texas, they were creating a Sharia enclave, and it got all this media attention. Again, folks, from making social media posts complaining, going to city council meetings, they'll
yep.
go to those meetings and complain.
That's right.
And it brought all of this attention. Texas Attorney General, the governor, but it also opened a federal investigation. And the thing about them is that they were clever. That it was facially neutral. In other words, they did not say specifically that no Christians could live there. They just said that the homeowners association would pay for the mosque and the school. So what Christian is going to want to live there and have their homeowner dues pay
zero.
For the mosque?
Yeah, zero.
You know, and so the federal Department of Justice closed their investigation, but the Attorney General now has found underlying crimes. For example, they run a funeral home without a license. They're running some kind of fraudulent Ponzi scheme, selling property with no utilities, no map. They're basically saying they're going to build homes, but they have no permits. So there are other kind of institutional roadblocks, but mark my words, that place is going to get built.
Yeah.
And there are many in the works across the United States, especially Northern California and other parts of
yeah.
Texas.
Yeah, and let's be honest, if they can do it, very smart
they
of them.
They can do it in Texas.
Because you talk about fight, and so if you are going to prosecute a war, you...
I was just thinking that, imagining a map with the little plastic tanks on
exactly.
it.
Exactly. You take out the strongest first, and the rest fall.
Yes.
So... it's interesting. who am I reading here? What is this? It's a mosque in Bronx. Quote, I want to use this moment to speak to the Muslims of New York City. No more living in the shadows. So this is...
a quote from Mamdani?
Yeah, I think it is. November 4th, victory speech. I am young and I am a Muslim. I refuse to apologize for being a Muslim. And no more will New York be a city where you can traffic in Islamophobia and win an election. So good for him. Good for him. Good for him. Because he's so committed as a Muslim. He is announcing out loud, I'm a Muslim. And everything about the city is going to go Muslim. And by the way, some are speculating that this December 24th, I'm sorry, this December in New York City at the Rockefeller Center will be the last Christmas, you know, that's a huge tradition.
Oh, right.
Will be the last Christmas in New York for as long as Mamdani is the mayor. That said, good for him. He's doing what the Christian is not doing. Can you imagine? I am young, I'm a Christian, and I refuse to apologize for being a Christian.
Can you imagine? People would lose their minds.
Can you imagine? We should.
Christian fascists.
You know how Babylon Bee does their amazing stuff? We should maybe invent something like that, where we take some statement by somebody.
Right.
That the whole nation is going to be brought to Islam. We should change it and say the whole nation is going to be brought to Christianity and do some fake news and then reveal later. And maybe we could
how hostile people would get.
Oh, just
they would lose their minds.
They would lose their minds completely. So
So you want to go to Idaho?
Exactly. From Texas to Idaho, what's
going on? The peace agreement. We didn't talk about the Israeli peace agreement.
Okay.
So the peace agreement, as Trump was doing his Arab tour, there were a number of deals. We didn't know all the details. But once the peace agreement came out, which we brought Qatar to the table, that was one of the major negotiators, Qatar and Turkey, it is revealed that Qatar, part of their aid package, their bonus, was a military installation inside our military base in Idaho.
So
they get their own facility to train.
We'll press this more in a second. Let me pretend. So why was Qatar at the table?
Well, because they needed to put, supposedly, because they were going to help push Hamas.
Why would Qatar have any influence to push Hamas?
Because they've been funding Hamas.
That's it. Yeah. She fell for it.
Yeah, of course. It's like telling your child, shut up right now. We're going to negotiate.
So you fund terrorism, Qatar.
Create the problem and then bring the solution.
There's an Islamic word for this. But this is a tactic. So Qatar, we're going to fund Hamas, create a problem. And then President Trump and the team comes. They invite us in on the peace talks, and we're the ones actually that are guilty for funding all this stuff. The blood's on our hands, but no one's noticing. So let's push it. Hey, can we build a military unit on one of your existing military bases in, in Red, Idaho? Can we do that? Yes, for being such good players, yes, you can.
And this goes back to what I said about credibility. When we were trying to build moderate networks, they say, you have no credibility. You can't bring people to the table. So diplomatically, historically, that's what we always do, is we go to the big bully in the room and say, what could we give you to stop fighting? Mm-hmm. But they don't understand the tactics of their enemy, that they will take your concessions and bury you with them.
That's right.
You know,
right.
we just don't understand our enemy. So we allow them to create this military installation to bring dozens of Qatari families, soldiers. And then what happens besides just the base? They have to build a mosque. They have to build a halal
market. On the base.
Somewhere, on the base right? Or around.
Or close by.
Or close by to establish their family.
But then religiously, that is an Islamic footprint of dominance we own this area.
Exactly. Because as far as I know, I don't think Idaho's on this map. Right.
It's not on the map.
Idaho has not yet been conquered.
It's going to be this. In fact, the updated map, this isn't 2 years old.
So yeah. So
the updated map will have Idaho as fallen. Yeah.
I didn't realize that back until just now. So they had no footprint in Idaho until this installation was agreed upon. And maybe they chose that on purpose, because we have military installations everywhere. Why did Qatar choose Idaho?
I'm just guessing. If it works in Idaho, then it's going to work in Wyoming and Montana. Just think about that for a moment. The spine of this nation is our nuclear strength.
See that?
And they're asking, I'm telling you, man, you got to give it to them. They're asking to do this on a military base.
Yeah.
It's amazing to me. Sorry, keep going, or is
no?
Okay, so
I don't know how much more depressing we can get.
You know what though? Sometimes being woken up is depressing.
Yeah,
You don't want to wake up on Saturday morning, but that's too bad. So November 5th, post-victory statement, Mandani. This campaign has awakened something powerful in New York's South Asian and Muslim communities. Interesting, he said South Asian.
Because he's Pakistani.
A sense of visibility, pride, and political belonging that's been denied for generations. Let's talk about this for a moment. Is Mandani a Muslim? He said he was.
He said he was.
And he said he's a young one. What religion in the world is I don't know if commanded is the right word, but what religion in the world is obliged by killing homosexuals?
Islam. It's punishable by death, homosexuality.
So wait, so Islam, regarding Islam and homosexuality, LGBTQ, whatever, Islam in its religious doctrine, Islam, Mandani's a Muslim.
Right.
New York. The doctrine of Islam says kill the sexually aberrant?
Yes. That's a Sharia compliant code.
That's Sharia compliant requirement.
Yes.
So all the progressives, the blue color in my triad, are running around
saying,
Islam.
Sharia's coming to New York.
And they'll say, I'm assuming, they're going to say, yes, it's time for a new age, a new New York. Yes, all this, and all the rainbow people, all of that. And little do they know that the doctrine of this man's belief system already has them on the chopping
block. And we have an example. Hamtramck banned pride flags. So you and I personally don't care for them, but I don't want them banned.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I don't like them, but I
don't
can't
like
ban
him,
them.
But he did.
Yeah.
Because he has an all-Muslim city council. So now, he banned pride flags on public property.
What is LGBTQ saying about
nothing.
That city?
I mean, a couple people complained at a city council meeting, but they didn't do anything about it. And there's a lot of data coming out on Mamdani and how he was funded. So there's this very long-standing, I know her very well from D.C., Linda Sarsour, a long-term Islamist, right? You see
Absolutely.
Her yelling and
never stops the mouth.
So she comes out and basically exposes to the world that it's CARE that funded him. So their Unity and Justice PAC, funneling money through other PACs and through individual donors, gave over $300,000 to Mamdani and are taking credit for Mamdani. CARE was an unindicted co-conspirator in the Holy Land
Foundation. Holy Land Foundation.
They should have been banned. They were banned by the FBI in 2009. They should have been banned in the United States a long time ago. Mm-hmm. So the fact is we are inept or unwilling to stop the known terror financing, Islamist activity, the hard edge. Forget the soft edge where people are just, you know, claiming to be socialists.
Recreational.
But the ones that are funding terrorism and supporting terrorism like Hamas and Hezbollah, we're still not stopping those either. So
why do you think?
I think it goes back to this credibility thing. I know when I was at FBI headquarters, every time CARE said something, it created an uproar. Anytime they did a news piece or an article, it's like, oh, what are we going to do?
Isn't that
what
amazing?
Are we going to do? They have an extreme amount of power in D.C., and it's this credibility thing. They speak for a lot of people. That's millions of people support them. We don't want to be Islamophobic.
Isn't that great? They invented that term, Islamophobic.
Back to that whole thing. They create the problem and then come in as the solution.
So you have to remember that. When somebody says, oh, you're a something-something, you just got to, listen, you just can't, let them do that. So, well, how do I stop them? Ignore them. I think it's Ben Shapiro that said, I refuse to be intimidated.
Well,
think about that for a moment.
That scholar I mentioned, Raymond Ibrahim, he says it like this. He says, a phobia is an irrational fear. I have no irrational fear of Islam.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah. He says, based on the historical context of everything Islam has done, it is not irrational. So that's what I tell people.
It's true because...
It's in the books, it's in the doctrine, it's in the history, it's in the way they have operated For centuries. Centuries.
I may not remember right, or I may, but Bin Laden, the day that was ordered for September 11th, that was not, it's not like they all got their tickets because there was a sale on Expedia that day. That was a very, very specific day, September 11th. And again, I don't remember if it was in, it was one of those talks where this is your glory, this is your honor, you are doing this for Allah, you are reclaiming the, there was the word, the verbiage of no longer will September 11th be a day of
I can't remember.
There's a word, but it's been, you know, we've been ashamed. Been ashamed for all these hundreds of years.
There is a significance to that date, but it's escaping
exactly
me right now.
So listen, on September 11th, 1683, the Islamic forces came into Vienna, Austria.
Oh, okay.
And the Polish king of Europe called for a unification of forces to fight against the invading jihadists. They met at the gates of Vienna, Austria. It was September 11th that European Allied War defeated the Muslim invaders on September 11th, 1683. Bin Laden knew that and had chosen September 11th.
Everything has a context. Historical context to them.
Yeah, and his thing was, we've got to reclaim these days of shame. We're going to rewrite the history of these dates, which I was just fascinated by that.
That's their perspective on the world. It's a continuum. It's a historical continuum. We think in 2-year, 4-year cycles. They think in 100-year cycles.
That's why, listen, everybody needs to read this book so you can get insomnia like me. I read the book, The 100-Year Marathon. Have you read this book?
No.
The 100-year marathon, it's about China's doctrine to infiltrate the West.
Oh.
100-year marathon regarding China's infiltration of America. It's fascinating because they are telling their grandchildren, children and grandchildren, this is what we're going to do.
And I'm fascinated what you think because, you know, I'm a student of yours, and just listening to you over the years talk about how America, you know, in the last days, nobody comes to the defense of Israel, and there is no America to come to the defense of Israel.
Right.
So if you think of, you brought up the Chinese doctrine, and we know the Islamic doctrine, can you see these forces, the red-green align, these forces aligning to destroy us? Chinese, Russian, Islamist?
Look, I'm guessing like a mere mortal, but I would say this. That the red, the green, the woke blue, and the Chinese red, throw any other color into the mix. Everybody knows America has got to be neutralized.
Right.
For any one of them to achieve their desires. Their desires do not match because it only matches for you. If you want global dominance, and if I want global dominance, but I'm Chinese and you're Persian, in my head, I will agree with you to take that guy out because he's the guy that's keeping it from all happening. Once he's out of the way,
right,
I'm going after you.
Then we
you.
Can solve it.
I'm going to go after you.
Yes.
So I think they will have alliances for each of their own perceived desire, but you know this, a house divided against itself cannot stand. I think, though, what we're watching is, unless there's a spiritual intervention by God with his people, you're watching the compromise of the nation having lived out its time in 250 years. It's come to, it will come to its end as we know it, and it will become so compromised that, imagine this, I'm just pretending, imagine if Trump loses the midterms. I've always thought that, by the way, I never thought Trump would finish his 4 years. I hope I'm wrong. But Trump loses the midterms, and I say loses the midterms, he loses the House. Mm-hmm. All Trump has to do to be neutralized is for him to lose the House.
Right.
He's got 2 years of nothingness. Nothing's going to happen. Imagine if you were Israel's enemies and you see this happening. Trump just got neutralized in a big way.
Right.
Do we strike within the now in the next 2 years before there's some sort of a Republican resurgence? Like, what if J.D. Vance runs?
Exactly.
Or do we wait because we think politically things are trending in our direction? And in 2028, it'd be absolutely a blue wave. And now we control all those people anyway. And Israel's completely abandoned. We'll cut her up. We'll cut Israel out at the UN.
Yep.
We'll make sure this happens. Certainly, we're cutting money off immediately. Think of that. Now America cannot come, will not come, doesn't care to come to Israel's aid. Thus, we fall into the category of all the nations of Ezekiel 38. Look, for people to say, we're so close to Ezekiel 38. I agree we are, but you got to understand what we're talking about here. For Ezekiel 38 to happen, America has got to be so weak and weakened that it cannot function.
Well, I'll tie in one more piece for you, Charlie Kirk's assassination. So everybody, let's not even talk about the crazy influencers talking about all the ridiculous. Well, the most important testimony that I heard was from Kash Patel himself in front of a Senate hearing, and he explained very briefly what they're now calling NVEs. So in my time, it was countering violent extremism, and he is calling this particular sect, because you're not allowed to identify it by Islam. He's calling them nihilistic violent extremist. So this is the merger of the red-green axis into violence.
Yes.
So they have a new bucket now that they've created for these various attacks. We have a variety of attacks, even on military bases, that were implemented by individuals that some people thought, wait a minute, are they right? Are they left? They couldn't tell because all they cared about was just destruction. They're nihilistic.
Wow.
But they were trained through jihadi ideology, Hitler literature.
Yes.
So they thought they were neo-Nazis, but they were reading Hitler literature, jihadi literature, ISIS literature, communist literature.
Marx.
Right. Tyler Robinson was part of the Queer Alliance. He was a member in the Queer Alliance. The Queer Alliance is run by an Iranian lady, funded by Cuba and other Marxist entities. Exactly. Exactly. And I think what's really going to come out, God willing, that this is going to be told correctly, if what I'm predicting is correct, because he just hinted it to it and never mentioned it again, that it will prove that this, that his killer's intention and the network that's behind him is this alliance.
Interesting.
And they took out Charlie Kirk because of what he did for Trump. Not only was he potentially a future candidate, but the ground game to him.
Yeah.
So he needed him out by the midterms.
Yeah.
They needed him out.
Isn't that something you said? I completely agree with you. The midterms. Charlie had to go before the midterms.
And so it was this powerful alliance that...
Now, look, that is a strategy called warfare.
Right.
And would that be asymmetric? Is that the right terminology?
I think so.
I think it's asymmetric, where it's non-conventional warfare.
Right, and it's not army against army.
Yeah, exactly. No one's got uniforms, right? And you don't know who's who. We have to. Yeah, do you have more, or do we?
I think I got it. I think we talked about Ahmed Oshara. I wanted to talk about Charlie's thing, and we talked about U.S. Muslims. I think we got it all.
Wow.
Yeah. The question about Sharia law. I think we got it all. Oh, we didn't talk about, the only one we didn't talk about is Lebanon. You had briefly asked me once, like, what?
Tell me what you know about, listen, you know way more about this than I do. All I know is that at the time of this podcast, I'm hearing that Lebanon is on the brink of civil war.
Yes, it's long, always on the brink. I lived in Lebanon in 2006 when the war broke out over the Hezbollah soldiers. It was, and I was scared out of my wits. And everyone was like, this is Lebanon. We have civil war every other day. Like, don't get scared. I evacuated anyways. But so here's the problem. And the reason this is relevant is Masad Boulos is a Maronite Christian. He is the father-in-law of Tiffany Trump. So Michael Boulos is married to Tiffany Trump. President Trump gave Masad Boulos the appointment as special advisor to Arab and Mideast affairs. Masad Boulos was involved in the campaign in Michigan to get the Michigan votes.
Did he? Yes. Oh, for Trump?
For Trump.
I see. Okay.
So he helped the mayor of Hamtramck. Remember that I tell you now as an appointment to Kuwait? He and Richard Grenell organized the meeting and they brought the players. I recognize the names from literally 25 years ago, same players, Syrian Ikhwan, Brotherhood people. And so what's extremely important about Masad Boulos' influence is that the politics of Lebanon is that it's kind of confessional in the sense that the president must be a Christian, but in order to form a governing body, you have to make alliances. So historically, the Shiites one group, mm-hmm. the Sunnis are one group, and the Christian are group. The Christians, majority of them, have aligned historically with Hezbollah. They benefited from the weaponry. They've benefited from the protection against the West. They didn't want unreasonable interference from the West. Hariri's party, you remember how he was blown up? That was 2005. After Hariri, Meshal Ayoun wins, and that is basically the solidification of Hezbollah's influence.
Wow.
The reason I say this is people look at Masad Boulos and they're like, he's a Christian, what's the problem? He is a member of the Maronite Party, historically aligned to Hezbollah, very close to Hezbollah. So he actually returned in the midst of the struggles of Lebanon after the Hariri assassination. In 2009, he goes to run for parliament under the party that is aligned to Hezbollah, the Christian party that's aligned to Hezbollah. Mm. So yes, he is a Christian, but all of those relationships that he has in the Middle East are very close to Hezbollah. So the new president in Lebanon, Joseph Ayoun, who's Western-backed, who wants to de-arm Hezbollah, mm-hmm. he doesn't have a leg to stand on. He can't form a coalition government. He will not be able to sustain his position if he tries to take away the weaponry of Hezbollah.
Right.
So as a Christian president, if he doesn't align himself either to the Sunnis or to the Shias, he will not be able to govern.
Didn't we hear Trump say something to the effect, or Hegseth, somebody said that Hamas has got to, part of the peace deal, wasn't it?
Part of
Hamas
the peace
has
deal.
Got to be completely disarmed.
And Hezbollah, they're trying to disarm Hezbollah too.
I'm sorry, Hezbollah.
Yes.
In the north, Hezbollah.
Yes, they're trying to disarm Hezbollah. And so Joseph Ayoun, no relation to the other Michael Ayoun that was earlier. He's saying, yes, I'm going to disarm him. And he's like, please give me your guns. And they're like, you know what?
Yeah.
The bird. You're not getting our guns. They're absolutely refusing. And all the news articles say that. And so this peace, meanwhile, as it starts to fall apart and Hamas is launching rockets and Iran is rearming and Lebanon is saying, we're not going to play games. We still gave Qatar a military base. We still sold that aircraft. So regardless of whether this peace treaty
this is absolutely amazing.
ends up in the trash, we still have Idaho subject to conquer. So that's what we got out of this deal.
Yeah. As we wrap this up, you have a real heart for Muslim women.
Absolutely.
And
for Muslims in general. My entire family is Muslim.
Yep. The in so many ways, the Islamic heaven is a man's heaven. It's a male heaven. It's interesting in some ways, and also, you know, people don't think about it, where Mormonism, its heaven is a very male-dominant heaven. For example, in Islam, I think you get 72 virgins.
72 virgins.
Is it the word huris?
The huris.
Huris?
Supposedly.
Black-eyed, brown-eyed.
I had one Islamic teacher tell me the women get men too, but I don't know if he was lying.
Oh, they get men. They just get the same man. And so the brown-eyed huris, and they are 72 of them. And then in Mormonism, you have 199 plus one is your earthly wife. Isn't that interesting?
Wow.
That's a lot of people don't realize. There's probably Mormons right now freaking out. Yeah, well,
why would you want that many?
It's listen, I've had one for 47 years.
It's very difficult.
Yeah. And she's been angelic, and it's still difficult.
She sure is.
Yeah. So what would you say to a Muslim woman who, as example, two Sundays ago here at church said to me, I came to Christ because I had nothing to live for in Islam.
Mm, so true.
What does that mean? Speak to them. Let's in our departure from this broadcast, Hedia, speak to them.
The greatest secret about salvation that I never knew, despite 25 years of interfaith activity, is that Jesus saves. So for the Muslim out there who thinks Jesus was a great prophet and all the other things that Islam teaches you, he's so much more than that. Mm. So it is accepting the virgin birth, which Muslims believe. It's accepting that he ascended to heaven. That's what we say. That's also what Christians believe, that he will descend to fight the Antichrist in the last days. We believe that too. The Muslims don't tell you about the cross. Allah actually mentions the cross, but tells you he deceived you about who died on the cross.
Wow.
So go back to your book and realize that God is telling you he deceived you about who died on the cross. And listen to the Christian story, listen to the story of Christ, and know who the real Jesus is. Because if you accept the cross, then you know he defeated death, hell, sin, and the grave. And with that, receive the free gift of salvation and just radically change your life. I lived as a devout Muslim and nothing in me ever changed. I was the same horrible person before and after. And the transformation I've experienced now is only by virtue of the power of the indwelling of the Holy Spirit and that relationship with Christ.
Yep.
So I pray he will meet you. I met Jesus on YouTube. So Jesus will meet you where you are.
Isn't that something?
He's a living God. He is still the way maker.
Still the way maker. Listen, share this podcast with friends and family. You've got to get the word out. It's probably our most consequential podcast that we've put out there, because this deals with not only the immediate now, but history backs up the fact that you should be listening to this podcast and not just fluffing it off your shoulder. You should pay attention, folks, because ready or not, if you like it or not, Islam is here, and it's very excited right now. It's very, very thrilled by the victories politically. But just know this, that if we stand on the side of what is honoring to the Lord, he will not have us stand alone. Maybe you're in a community right now and your community's been overrun. Listen, before it's too late, start praying and getting guidance from the Lord and direction, asking God to manifest his power and for him to shine the light in your community. It's never too late as long as you're alive, because Christ is on his throne. And heaven awaits all those, just as Hedia just said a moment ago, Jesus Christ died on the cross for all of us. He rose again from the dead for all of us, but only those who receive him experience the benefits of his amazing merit and work that he applies to anyone who will repent and believe on him. Come to the Christ of the Bible. Come to the Lord of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and he'll set you free. God bless you guys. Until next time.
Thank you for joining us for this very informative edition of Signs of the Times with Pastor Jack Hibbs and Hedia Miramati. Until next time, we encourage you to study your Bible so that you can be aware of the signs of the times.